Recording is on.
Hey everyone, we'll get started in about a minute.
Welcome to the first speaker session.
Okay, great. So I think we can get started now. Hi, my name's Wayne Chang, and I'm going to be moderating the W3C Credentials Community Group today for everyone. And we meet every week. We're going to do an agenda review, and then we're going to do our main event with Fan Zhang presenting Deco, which is a technique allowing users to prove a piece of data accessed via TLS came from that website and prove statements about the contents. So for our agenda today, we have an IP note. Anyone can participate in these calls, but all substantive contributors to any CCG work items have to be members of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. You can find instructions in the agenda that was sent out. These minutes and an audio recording of everything said on this call are going to be archived and publicly available. We use IRC to cue speakers during the call, as well as take minutes. You can join using the links in the agenda, or you can just use the Jitsi text chat as well. There's a bridge to IRC with that. All attendees should type present plus, the symbol plus, to get your name on the attendee list and in the transcript. In IRC, you can type Q plus to add yourself to the queue with an optional reminder, Q plus, and then to mention something. You can also do that in Jitsi. Please be brief whenever you talk so the rest of the queue can get a chance to chime in, give feedback. We love hearing people's long opinions about things, but we do also care about members getting a say in everything. So this meeting is held by voice, not by IRC. Any off-topic IRC comments are subject to deletion from the record. We work hard to manage a single-threaded conversation so everyone can participate and be heard. Please respect the group process by joining the queue when you have something to contribute. That's with the Q plus. Onwards to scribe selection. We need a volunteer to scribe. And I will start calling on folks from the scribe list. And if someone wants to volunteer, please feel free to speak up in IRC, cue yourself. Christopher Allen, are you around? Okay, Moses Ma, are you around? Drummond Reed, are you around? Adam Lemon, are you around? Justin Richer, are you around? Dimitri Zagadulin, are you around?
Dimitri actually scribed last week. I forgot to move him to the front of it. So sorry about that.
No worries. Yeah. So we'll skip over Dimitri. Ganesh Anand, are you around? Jonathan Holt, are you around?
Yeah. Do you think someone can share and do it in the second half? I have to leave early.
Okay. I think we'll see.
This is Joe. I can take the second half. Joe can do the first.
Yeah, okay. And we will make sure to make the scribe transition during as well. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much, Jonathan and Joe. Now that we have our scribes, we can set the topic and begin introductions and reintroductions. Is anyone new to the call and would like to introduce themselves? Everyone's very friendly here, so if you haven't been on these calls before and you just want to, you know, say who you are, a sentence about yourself, we're all very curious, you know, where everyone's coming from, so you'd be welcome to. Oh, so we have a cue. D, will you introduce yourself, please? And
can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yes, my name is D, and I am in the payments industry and also the blockchain industry simultaneously. And glad to be here to learn more and just contribute where I can. So thank you so much for hosting this.
Great. Thanks so much. Any other introductions?
Sure. Can you hear me? This is Akeen Sawyer.
Yeah. Great to meet you, Akeen.
Yeah. So I am strategy and governance, one of the governance leads for Decred, which is a decentralized blockchain project. I'm also particularly interested in Deco because I'm a long-term contributor to Link, Chainlink. So I was just curious as to trying to better understand Deco, which is what brought me here. Thank you.
Excellent. Happy to have you. All right. Any other introduction? Okay, moving to reintroductions. Would anyone like to reintroduce themselves? Maybe you've changed your job or you just haven't visited in a while.
Hi, my name is Marty. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you, Marty.
Yeah, so I'm with Measure.io working on agricultural food security and track and trace. My background is in visual analytics and decision science. So I'm very interested in the way that human beings make decisions with data and analytics, and here for the first time today.
Great. I think I could use more decision science. We're grateful to have you. Any other reintroductions?
Yeah, it's actually an introduction, not a reintroduction, but I'm Brian Munns, also with Measure, and I have background also in analytics, more as a from the developer side. But yeah.
Thanks so much. We have time for one more reintroduction or introduction. Anyone feel free to speak up. Okay, great. So we're going to move to the next section, announcements and reminders. And, so the biggest announcement here is that the Internet Identity Workshop is happening on October 20th through October 22nd. For those of you not familiar with the Internet Identity Workshop, it is an unconference where the conference participants decide the entire agenda. And as disorganized as that sounds, it's actually strangely very organized and very salient. A lot of work gets done there. And it's extremely collaborative. So if you're new to the decentralized identity ecosystem or the digital identity ecosystem in general, that's an excellent place to go. There are a lot of longtime attendees who you can learn a lot from. And, Kim, I see you're on the queue.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that next week we're having kind of a special meeting. So this is the time of year that W3C has TPAC, which is a series of events across W3C to allow groups to learn what each other is doing. And so we decided to host our TPAC meeting during the normal CCG meeting time next week. So next week will be a bit of overview of what this group has done historically, what our goals are now, and sort of highlights of our accomplishments in the past. So, if you're sort of new to the group, it might be a good opportunity to learn more context about what we're up to. And that will be led by our newest chairs, Wayne and Heather. So, I encourage you to join that. That's all.
Great. And I'd like to just point out that Kalia Young, Identity Woman, has pointed out in IRC that she's willing to help you figure out how to get to IIW if you have some issues doing that, because one of the prerogatives is accessibility inclusivity. Great. So moving on to progress on action items, unless anyone else has an announcement or reminder, feel free to add yourself to the queue if you do. Okay, so the link that we're using to look at to review the issues is a GitHub filter link that I will share in chat. And we're going to talk about Jitsi and traceability vocabulary. So first, starting with Jitsi issue 157. Kim, I believe that you've opened this issue, and I'm happy to contribute because I have been part of this process as well, but wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about it if you wanted to.
Oh, no, I have nothing. This is just a chance for, everything the chairs have been discussing about, sort of the status, deadlines, and everything. I think you have the best context of that right now. So, and Heather, if there's anything you want to add as well, add yourself to the queue.
Yeah, I see that the queue has Manu, and I just wanted to point out that when you leave Jitsi long enough by itself, it begins to govern and evolve itself. We're literally using it to improve it. So bootstrapped, Manu.
Yeah, so just really quickly from a technical perspective on where we are with Jitsi, we, I believe, hit stability last week. So the machine was a bit underpowered. We gave it a little more CPU, and as a result, we seemed to be holding steady during the meetings, even with screen sharing turned on and high definition video being broadcast. The machine's keeping up. I'm looking at it right now. Seems to be doing fine. My hope is that, we hold maybe four meetings where we have, no issues, everything seems fine, and then we go into the next leg, which is, as Wayne was saying, where Jitsi becomes self-aware and starts scribing for us and all that kind of stuff. There are a couple of places we could go, and it'd be good to know, from the community where folks would like to take it. I think some of the immediate things that could happen if we hit stability are things like allowing the other subgroups to use it for their meetings, so that we record all audio and video for that. Things like the educational task force, the DID resolution stuff. There may be some stuff around linked data security. Maybe the SDS working group at DIF could start using the bridge. And we start there and then expand out into autoscribe and adding new features like automatic scribe selection and stuff like that. So technically it feels like we've finally hit a point of stability. Thanks to everyone for staying with us while that went on. Now it's a question of what do we build out to? What are the priorities of the group? That's it.
Great. I, for one, support our ambitious efforts towards achieving the standards group pipe dream of meeting tools. Any other people in the queue? All right.
Yeah, Wayne, I think I'm on the queue.
Oh, you are. Yeah. So, Heather, go ahead.
Cool. Okay, so I just want to give a shout out to the survey, which has an option for you guys to give feedback on Jitsi, among other things. So please take it and give us some general feedback on the participants that have been presenting, as well as the process of moving forward. Also, I think I want to mention too, regarding the transition is we're kind of having a little bit of an interrupt in the minutes. So because we are retooling all of the internal infrastructures that were set up from the previous system to use Jitsi now that we are we're slowly getting up to speed on that. Last week we did get really good minutes, but I don't think it's been posted up yet. So if you've got questions or you want minutes from the last month, get in touch with the chairs.
Great, thank you. We now recognize Defogbonum. Okay, if Defogbonum is not a real entity, then we will acknowledge Kim.
Yeah, so Wayne, the part I was hoping that you could add more discussion about was what the chairs discussed last week. So basically, I think we had a gap in communication. So the idea was that we were supposed to migrate the meeting minute publishing stuff over. And so I think the concern that that some of us had raised is that there's kind of a series of lingering non-converted things. And so the biggest risk was that, you know, so our first goal was to get parity with the last system, which you know, given that we're not auto publishing minutes anymore and we've lost that, you know, that's a concern. So we set up a deadline, a self-imposed deadline of, end of October, I believe. And so, you know, it would be horrible to lose this much momentum, but, you know, I think that there was probably a lack of clarity around who had signed up to do that migration. And so, but just with other people's commitments, it's, sort of not really clear, what status we're in and, you know, what the, basically what the map forward will be. So, the risk is that at the end of the month, we might have to explore, other options just to get back to the point of parity. We talked about using Zoom. I would hate to have to switch to that, but basically we can't keep going on in this way. So, the chairs will be discussing a little bit further on Thursday about how to get out of this state. And, you know, we'll be looking for opportunities for volunteers to help out.
Great. Thank you so much. Yeah. So we need to publish the notes for everyone. You might have noticed a week or two lag. We need to figure out what to do about that by the end of this month is the long and short of it, because the notes do need to be public. So if you're interested in possibly contributing to updating some scripts or something to that matter, you know, or perhaps we will definitely figure that out by the end of the month to provide, you know, on our promise for transparency to the community. Cool. Any more discussion points about this item? The queue is empty. Manu.
Yeah, I'm a bit dismayed to hear that. I think that would be, you know, throwing the baby out with the bathwater. We publish the logs. Anyway, it's a simple fix. I'll see what I can do. Hopefully somebody else can step forward and do those modifications to the script. General frustration.
Yeah, thank you, Manu. I'm open to putting time behind that too and upgrading the scripts. I think there was you know, some lack of clarity in who was going to do it, but the script updates don't seem that large. Okay, great. Any other words about this issue? 157. Okay, great. Moving on. So the next item is item 156, proposed work item, traceability vocabulary. And if we have any list owners here, this is a registry, I believe, a proposed work item. That is, we're making a list of things. And Ori,
yep.
Mike Prorock, and oh, go ahead. if you'd like to speak to it.
Sure. So I think I've introduced this item before. Similar to the citizenship vocabulary, there are a number of companies that are working with the Department of Homeland Security, Silicon Valley Innovation Program, on traceability, and specifically vocabulary associated with supply chain traceability around proof of origin credentials. So basically, where does this steel come from? Where does this timber? Where does this oil come from? Where does this food come from? Challenges around creating verifiable credentials that solve that particular set of problems. And this vocabulary is a proposal to import and rely on schema.org, GS1, some chemistry academic ontologies, some material property ontologies, and obviously also the international standards associated with testing of materials or other tests that apply to traded goods as they move across borders. And that's basically summary of like what the vocabulary is. It's meant to be to provide common terms that can be reused across traceability credential use cases.
Great. Do we have any comments on this? Questions? Feel free to add yourself to the queue. Okay, great. My comments on this are that, you know, as chair, I see that there are list owners from multiple parties, and we just require at least two different owners of a work item. So there's no reason why this shouldn't move forward, and we will get on that quickly.
Just because I'm one of the primary contributors to it, is it okay if I move the repo directly to the W3C CCG after this call?
Can you repeat that? Move the repository to the CCG repository?
Yes, I'd like to move the repository to the CCG GitHub organization and set up all of the link fixes associated with that process.
Yep. And Heather and Kim, does this sound appropriate to you all?
Yes, so that's fine. I think we still have to do a bit more of administrative work to add the licenses, but that's part of the standard chair work item. So just update that issue when you've migrated it, and then that will be a trigger for chairs to update with the boilerplate files.
I did set the boilerplate to what typically is set. So it's possible that I've already set it up properly for you.
Okay, great. The one thing to check is that we have recently updated our license. So check just any recently updated repo. I think like what's the one that was just moved in? I can't. Well, let me look real fast and I'll come up with it.
Okay, great. Do we feel like we have a resolution here?
Wayne, I would just say let's just review everything and give the sign off next time we meet as chairs, and we can circle back.
Okay, that's fine. So we will provide the update in the issue, but it should be pretty quick, I think. Okay, great. All right, the queue is empty, and we're going to move on to the main event. So, Fan, are you around?
Hi, Wynn. Yes, I am around.
Hi, Fan. Hello, great to have you. Fan is the co-author of Deco, which attempts to liberate the web using TLS. And we're glad to have him talk about his work on that. And to reread the agenda in this upcoming meeting, Fan Zhang will describe his work on Deco, a technique which allows users to prove that a piece of data accessed via TLS came from a particular website and optionally prove statements about such data in zero knowledge and keeping the data itself secret. And we think it's meaningful to the ecosystem because It could potentially allow anyone to prove the results of visiting their TLS protected bank account balance or college transcript while maintaining privacy. And Fan, I'll hand it over to you. You can find the screen share in the bottom left of Jitsi.
Thank you, Wayne. Can you guys see the slides? I believe I'm sharing the stuff. Can you see my slides?
I can't see your slides. Can anyone else see them?
I don't see them. I see like the screen share icon.
Okay, let me try a different. Is this working now?
Hey, depending on what operating, it's not working. Depending on what operating system you're using, you might want to share a specific tab rather than a window or a monitor.
I'm using PowerPoint.
Oh, okay.
So the other thing that we could do is anyone else that can screen share can screen share, and you can ask them to advance the slides.
Let me just try again real quick. Yeah, is any of my screen going through?
Unfortunately not. I will rejoin and I can share the deck for you if that's okay.
Sure, yeah. Okay, let's do that.
Okay, let me just pull up your slides here. I believe it was in the email. Okay. All right, I have it open locally and I will share it. Okay, perfect. So I have it screen share. All right, can everyone see my screen?
Wayne, I don't see it.
I don't see it, and when I tried to show my video, I also didn't see my video. Oh, now I see it.
It looks like it's starting to come in now, but it also only shows the icon.
I can see it.
That's not my screen. It's.
Can you see? I just tried a different browser. Is that working?
Yeah. Yes. We can. Oh, we can see
there
it.
There we go. You guys can see the slides now?
Yes, we can see the slide. Perfect. Thank you so much. Sorry about that.
Great, no problem. It turns out Chrome works, but Firefox didn't. Anyway, sorry. Let's get started. Thanks, Wayne. again for the invitation. I'm delighted to speak here. So my name is Fan Zhang. I'm currently a security researcher at Chainlink Labs. I was previously at Cornell and IC3. In this talk, I'm going to talk about the DECO protocol, or how can you turn any TLS web page to a verifiable claim, right? I should say that this work is done while I was at a PhD student at Cornell and IC3. Well, the focus of this talk is about identity, decentralized identity, although DECO has several applications. So first of all, why do we care about the new identity system? Right? That's because the current one kind of sucks. Right? Many of us have the experience of opening a crypto account online. For example, if you want to buy cryptocurrency, you need to open an account with Coinbase. And the very first thing you do is to perform the so-called KYC check by validating your identity. And it's, of course, not good user experience to do this physically, so you do it over a video. How do you do it? Well, you present your face along with a piece of identity card to the webcam. It sounds easy, right? But no, you can't do it like that because you are covering the card. You can't do it like that either because now you're covering your face. So there's a very particular way of posing yourself to please the verification algorithms. So yes, you can do it like that. Or, like that. But thanks to the advanced AI technology, changing face in video session is no longer a sci-fi concept anymore. So what is the point? The point is ID verification is a burdensome process, right? Because the legacy identity systems we are using is not catching up with the rest of our digital life. And not to mention the big privacy concerns during this whole process of recording and presenting identity documents. And also this is prone to all kinds of fraud, right? It's not hard to create a fake identity card, especially when physical examination is not happening. And it is even not hard to change your face, right? There's a lot of motivation for a new approach, and the decentralized identity is a promising one. I'm sure people in this call would be familiar with the basic idea of a decentralized identity, right, is to have users to manage their own identity via the use of, cryptographic tools. By the way, I don't see I couldn't see the chat window, but feel free to unmute yourself and interrupt me if you have questions. Okay. In decentralized identity systems, each user has a pair of keys, and in the envisioned ecosystem, issuers will issue, a special form of identity or credentials, such as driver's license, but in a digital form, in a way that is bind to a user's public key, right? And when Alice is required to show her credential, she can then just use the secret key to prove her identity, right? And moreover, Alice can make use of cryptography for privacy. For example, one can prove her age is over 18 without revealing the exact date of birth, using what we call zero-knowledge proofs. And this is just one example, and you can do a lot of things under this flexible framework. And that's all good, right? Decentralized identity has a number of advantages, including improved user experience, reduced the fraud, and empower users, right, to manage their own private ID data, provide credentials to, disenfranchised, for example, stateless people. And interestingly, it also, it's good for enterprises as well because it reduced the liability and the risks associated with storing PII. So the future is bright, right? That's all good. But How do we get there? Well, as I'm sure people in this call would know, there's a lot of interest in DID, and there's, you know, several community groups and the standardization bodies are working on to doing a lot of work to bring this to reality, which is really impressive. However, after reviewing several DID standards, we found that several what we believe to be critical challenges sort of got swept under the rug. Right, I will just name a few of them here. Well, all of these are exciting topics for another day. In this talk, I'm going to focus on specifically on the bootstrap challenge. Right? How do you bootstrap the issuers, essentially? Right? So what do I mean by that? In our example, we've been, you know, assuming there is a issuer that will, for example, DMV, that will issue a digital driver's license to Alice. But the question is, guess when would DMV start doing that, right? It's probably not a good idea. DMV is probably not the most efficient entity in the world, but this is not specific to DMV, right? Essentially, decentralized identity requires specialized credentials, such as digital diplomas, proofs of coverage, solvency, etc. But in reality, very few authorities or issuers are actually releasing this type of credentials in a way that is, you know, useful for decentralized identities. And there's a reason for that, right? There's a good reason for that. It's, on the one hand, it seems unlikely that these issuers will join the system unless the system, the existing ecosystem, is mature enough. Well, but conversely, on the other hand, the ecosystem will not mature without issuers. Right? So we're seeing what we believe is a chicken and egg problem. Right? Issuers are waiting for the ecosystem to grow, you know, before they commit to produce these specialized credentials, but the ecosystem cannot grow without the, you know, without enough issuers. So the idea, so the challenge that Deco can help tackle is to break this circularity by making use of existing data. I will give you an example, right? For each type of credential we've, you know, sort of described, there are already trustworthy websites that has the data that we want. I mean, for example, again, let's use this age verification example. Social Security Agency, for example, this website will display one's date of birth after the user logs in. Right? Now the challenge is how would Alice prove to Bob, to somebody, you know, over the internet, somebody that Alice doesn't trust, that the webpage from ssa.gov indeed contains the, you know, a date of birth that, so that it is true, Alice is indeed over 18. I mean, the first option, is Alice could send over a screenshot, right? But however, as we all know, Photoshop is, you know, is available, and it's very easy to tamper with screenshots, and therefore this approach, although it's, you know, admittedly used in practice, but we believe it wouldn't work as a reliable identity system. Well, another option is Alice can potentially send over a piece of credential, for example, her password, so that Bob can log into the system and simply check whether Alice is over 18 or not. This, however, is not going to work in general unless the password is, you know, only give Bob a one-time read-only access to only the specific information that we want to disclose. But that, unfortunately, is not always the case. It's almost not the case. In almost all cases. So another idea right, that comes into mind is to make use of more advanced tools, such as cryptography, such as the cryptographic tool protocols that are already deployed. Now, very likely, when Alice requests web data from the Social Security Agency website, the data is offered over TLS, Transport Layer Security Channels, right? And TLS is designed to authenticate web traffic. And that sounds close to what we want. So can Alice use this chat log, essentially, the TLS messages exchanges between the Alice and the SSH server as a verifiable claim? Well, unfortunately, the answer is no, because TLS doesn't give us that, you know, cryptographic property. The problem with TLS is TLS does not sign the data. This is often a misunderstanding about TLS. Although signature is used in TLS, it's only used in the key exchange phase, and TLS use a semantic key, a key had both by the server and the client to authenticate the data. So it uses MAX, or in other words, signing using a semantic key. So what does this mean? This means from Bob, somebody else's point of view, this chat log between Alice and the server is no better than a screenshot, because Alice, who has the session key, can just tamper with the ciphertext, easily, do whatever she wants. That's the crux of the problem with TLS. So how can we make this, the servers more, BID friendly? One idea, and people have, proposed this, is to change the servers. Right? We still want to make use of existing data, so let's change the servers to work for us. For example, servers do already have the certificates, so they in principle can digitally sign, data. There are proposals that have TLS to actually sign the data. There's also proposals that, we deploy more, new applications, on the server side. For example, OpenID Connect, I think is a very promising and interesting direction, step in this direction. But the drawback of all these approaches is it requires a lot of changes on the server side, right? Either changing the TLS stack or it's adding some new functionality to the server, which requires the server to install new software and so on and so forth. And this doesn't solve the bootstrap problem because still need changes to be done and requires adoption. So we are back to square one with this type of solutions. Our approach, to the contrary, is to try to work with existing servers. We believe that this is the key to solve the bootstrap problems. So our goal is to enable Alice to prove to Bob, my age is over 18 or over 21, just according to a piece of data that Bob will not be able to see himself, according to data from, for example, SSA.gov. Well, but didn't I just say that TLS doesn't enable proof of to a third party? Well, that's the magic of DECL. The magic of DECL, so to speak, is when Alice or the prover in DECL logs into a website, the session key she establishes with the server is going to be split on the client side between the prover and the verifier. Right, the prover and the verifier here need to interact to make this happen. But the crux is now the prover doesn't have the full session key and therefore cannot forge signatures. The only party that has the full session key is the server. Right, that solved the problem with TLS we just saw. And in more technical term, this is achieved using a protocol we call a three-party handshake. The session keys are secrets shared between prover and the verifier, but their keys are related. Their sum is the same as the server's key. So I'm not going to describe the protocol details, but hopefully this gives you a sense of what is the main idea of DECO.
So quick clarification question.
Please.
Just in an earlier slide, you mentioned that...
We will have time for...
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Feel free to ask this question, but future questions, please use the queuing system.
Got it, right. So in an earlier slide, you mentioned that TLS doesn't sign the contents of the page itself. It only bootstraps the handshake. How does splitting the key address that?
Yeah, the idea is now the prover doesn't have the issue was the prover has the same key as the server does. Therefore, the prover can generate max as the server can do. Now, the prover no longer have the full MAC key. And now, therefore, only the server can generate the MAC. And the verifier knows this because the verifier has the other half of the MAC key. So the TLS still does not sign the content, but we sort of deprive the prover's ability to generate signatures so that the only party in the world can generate that signature is the server.
Fan, did you have more to your presentation? Wanted to give you a chance to finish before we move to the Q&A.
Yeah, I think I still have a... Yeah, let me proceed. I maybe this will get clear if we proceed a little bit. So that's the how three-party handshake works. The intuition of the DECO protocol, I will not go in... the protocol is quite involved, but after the handshake, after Alice and Bob generate this split key. Well, they will use the key in a fashion that is basically in a joint manner. The crux, as I said, is that Alice can no longer forge data from the server, and Alice then can prove things about data to Bob in their knowledge, and all of this is done. That is in a way that is transparent to the server. In other words, from the server's point of view, the server is not even aware of this is going on. Server is not aware of the verifier is interacting with the prover and so on and so forth. All the server sees is a regular TLS session. Okay. I'm happy to answer give more technical details, but let me proceed to just give a quick overview of how this can be used in a decentralized identity system, in particular in our follow-up work, Candid. And Candid is going to be presented at IIW in a few weeks. The paper is accepted to IEEE Symposium on Security and Privacy. Just very quickly give you a sense of how it's set up. In Candid, what we have is a committee. This committee is N servers and different servers from different organizations and so on and so forth. And we assume they are set up in a way such that it is plausible to assume K out of them are honest. This committee does two things. They store secrets in a shared fashion using secret sharing, and they verify DECO proofs. So how does DECO fit into this picture? Well, for example, this user wants to issue a credential or request a credential from the committee to prove she's over 18. For example, if she wants to vote, we need a proof of, over 18 to vote in a particular event or to join to participate in a ICO, you need this type of credential, just for example. So what the user does is user re- perform that whole verification protocol with members in the committee. She can repeat the same protocol. DECL can be extended to support multiple verifiers easily. And after the committee all have verified this party's age via DECL, then the committee can generate a collectively signed statement saying, okay, we are all convinced that Alice is indeed over 18. And now we effectively are turning any web server into an issuer with DECL. And, you know, in addition to just being legacy compatible with existing servers, note the privacy gain here, right? Committee only learns the fact that Alice is over 18, but nothing else, right? Not the exact date of birth, not her home addresses, because we are using we can use their knowledge proofs. Legacy compatible. You know, it can turn any web data into such attestation. I'll just quickly summarize, right? DECL is a protocol between the prover and the verifier. It allows the prover to prove a piece of data came from a particular web page and in a privacy preserving fashion. You don't need to give Bob your bank account to prove you have more than $5,000 in your bank, account. And Candid is a system that is a decentralized identity architecture that makes use of DECL to solve the bootstrap problem. And there will be an upcoming talk at IIW, so I would recommend attending that if you are interested in Candid. I will stop here, and I'm happy to discuss and answer questions.
Great. Thanks so much for the presentation, Fan. We're very grateful to have you. There's a queue to ask questions, and it looks like Happen from CU Berlin wants to ask the first question. You have the floor. Okay, Hakan or Hakan is not here, so Jonathan Holt is up.
So I think there is this SGX from Google, which is basically an HTTP signed response, and I think it's already becoming an IETF standard, and here's the draft that does something very similar, which is basically has one handshake exchange of the data, and I think there's only one certificate authority, DigiCert, that actually supports this right now. But what are your thoughts as far as the overlap of the SGX Google solution to this and your solution?
I think the one I'm aware of, I use something around the HTTP signing from Google. I assume that's close to what you're referring to. Yeah, those solutions, I think, ultimately are a promising direction to go. The challenge with all these solutions that requires changes at the server side is the bootstrap challenge. The same challenge we had with lack of issuers. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be unclear how fast the adoption can be. Basically, yeah, our solution, the goal is different. Our goal is to be able to make use of existing servers as they are today, without requiring any changes. And the Google's solution, I think, is nice, which is similar to, technically, at the high level, similar to OpenID Connect and other proposals, but they all require changes at the server side, which has pros and cons, but the main drawback, I believe, is breaking the legacy compatibility.
Great. Next, we recognize Adrian.
So, thank you. I've proposed the solution to exactly the same bootstrap problem using a notary instead of the committee. So I'm curious if you would consider that a valid use of DECL. In other words, the notary would have to install a particular technology in order to create verifiable credentials or whatever. The verifier and Alice would both choose to trust a notary, which would work in the large majority of cases that we know of. And DECO would then be the technology that would be embedded along with the notary's other credential management things such that it all works. Is that a fair way of summarizing what you're doing without a committee?
I think that's correct. And the committee is a flexible setup. You can think of this notary as a committee of just a size one, if I'm understanding. I think if Alice and Bob are willing to trust the committee, yes, they could do it that way. But I want to mention that in Candid, the committee is used for multiple things. They also store secrets, which is, having one node to store the secrets, I think is a single point risk of failures, whereas if you can distribute the risk across multiple nodes so that the attacker needs to compromise a majority of them to learn the secrets, I think is better. For DECO, the single node notary, I think that's a valid setup. But for DID in general, I think the committee has other advantages.
Great. R. Grant, you're recognized.
About, can Alice send post data without a fully functional key on the TLS channel?
Yes, you could send a post. The protocol you run on top of TLS in some sense doesn't matter.
Great.
Okay, so TLS is still fully functional. Thank you.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Hi, this is Mario. I don't understand how the actual signed statement gets over to the relying party or the verifier. So let's take your Social Security Administration example. Using the DECO protocol, I go through, something happens. I don't quite understand exactly what happens, but then I end up on the Social Security Administration website, who then says my date of birth is a certain value. How is the ZKP for that value that I guess it's just, text on the Social Security Administration website, how is that statement sent back over to the relying party or the verifier so that they can see that statement, right? I mean, typically we'd use a verifiable credential for that, but I'm hearing you say something different. I don't understand how the relying party gets the information in a machine readable and automated way so that they can verify that statement's true.
Hi, thanks, Manuel. I think that's a very good question. Let me go back a few slides. The relying party in the Candid setup is not the committee. So the committee is part of the issuer, and the relying party receives signed statement from the committee. Right. So the way it works is Alice requests this to request the proof over 18. Alice executes DECO with committee members along with SSA website, for example. And the committee members, they reach a consensus. For example, a majority of them are convinced that they generate a credential for Alice. That credential is then used to authenticate Alice in applications. So applications are not involved in DECO directly.
How do they become convinced? That's where I'm stuck.
Well, they are DECO, if they are participating in DECO, right? DECO guarantees, first of all, DECO guarantees this data is indeed from Social Security Agency website. This can be verified by checking the certificates, and that's a security property of the DECO protocol. then they can see part of the data, right? They can see part of the, you know, the date of birth, and they can still verify the part that they see is correctly derived from the web page because of the use of, for example, zero knowledge proofs. It's as if they are looking at Alice's Social Security Agency profile, but without having the password. Does that help?
I believe it's effectively like Alice is doing a screen share with them.
It's
where the screen share's cryptographically signed.
That's the core bit. Yeah, this cryptographic guarantee that Alice can't just tamper with the screen sharing. That's the whole point of that. Yes, that's effectively it's the same as sending over a screenshot, but two advantages, right? Cryptographic tamper-proofness as well as privacy guarantee. Alice can redact some of the screenshots and still be able to convince the committee members of the integrity of that screenshot.
Great. Thanks. We are at the top of the hour, and I think that's a great place to conclude. Fan, thanks so much for the presentation. How do people get in touch with you if they want to talk more?
Thanks. Thanks a lot. Those are really good questions.
Your email, I think, was shared to the mailing list and is on the presentation, right?
Yep. Feel free to reach out. Happy to talk, answer questions. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for attending, and see you all next week at the TPAC event. Thanks again. And thank you, our scribe, Andrew and Jonathan Holt, for their excellent service.